You see, last week we finished out the Reverend Berlin. And while the first half of this year is not debatable, simply the fact is that the Avodat HaMelech cited the Rav six times, and it shows that the Rav had familiarity with variant readings. Now, you know, someone might say, well, what does that prove as far as Chachmat Yisrael goes? Variant readings, certainly the Gaon certainly understood variant readings, the Bach understood variant readings, and time and again in the Rishonim, when you deal with the Rambam and the Rif, and you try to recreate the Gemara, you see that each one at times had a different text. So there's no way you find in Rashi itself, where Rashi will bring down to Shini Nuschat Gisot. So there's no question that dealing with variant readings doesn't necessarily imply one is fluent or conversant with Chachmat Yisrael. On the other hand, considering that the Rav was now thrust into Berlin and into Hildesheim and into the entire environment there, and Rabbi Chiel Yaakov Weinberg and Rabbi Chaim Hella, so I believe it's a safe conclusion that the Rav certainly was exposed to Wissenschaftler Studentum, and his seeking out variant readings for his uncle is both the reflection of classic rabbinic scholarship. In addition, it is enhanced or polished or added to by contemporary yearnings or seekings or searchings that were going on in Berlin at the time. That you can't debate. The second part of the shiur, where I try to understand why was it that the Rav remained totally a Talmud Torah person, at least in his public gestalt, and even in his published gestalt, it's very hard to see the Rav ever coming up with anything that bordered on Chachmat Yisrael. And there, it's conjecture on my part. Whether my theory is right or wrong, I don't know. I believe I'm right, I think I'm right, but I can never say it with certainty. And that's where Mark Shapiro's doctorate and Rabbi Chiel Yaakov Weinberg proved so helpful. Because until the moment that I saw his doctorate, I never really understood that there were major differences between Rabbi Chiel Yaakov Weinberg and Rabbi Chaim Hella. On just a first glance, a priori, I would view the two as being kindred spirits. After all, they both came from Eastern Europe, both wound up in Berlin, both were involved in Chachmat Yisrael, and neither Rabbi Chiel Yaakov nor Rabbi Chaim Hella went back to being the simple East European yeshiva boy, if I can use that as an aphorism. But on the other hand, there were major differences. And the fact that Rabbi Chiel Yaakov was so critical of Rabbi Chaim Hella, and yet the Rav chooses Rabbi Chaim Hella as his prototype, as his father figure later, and all of us know the relationship was so close and so warm, at kedei kach, that the Rav time and again would say, the world makes a mistake, they think at two rabbeim, because the world really thought, when we were growing up, if we were to judge by what we saw with our own eyes, we would conclude that the Rav had Rav Moshe as a Rebbe, and the Rav had Rabbi Chaim Hella as a Rebbe. There's no question that the covet he gave Rabbi Chaim Hella was overwhelming. So the Rav always would say, the Welt macht a Toyos. Now that Toyos goes so far that if you look into the Encyclopedia Judaica, and of course I bear no responsibility for this because I didn't write the article. I didn't edit the article. But it was an early article. It was Hella, where it was an H. When I came into the Encyclopedia, we were basically up to MN at that time. But if you look into the entry of Chaim Hella, you will see that the Rav is listed as one of his students. The Rav is listed as one of his students in the article in the Judaica. And that's what the Rav was telling us, that it was more of a father-son relationship than a Talmud-Rebbe relationship. And in other words, the Rav already, when he reaches Berlin, is a Gaon Adir. The Rav already is the Rav. He's already the Gaon. He's the gem already. It may be he's not yet polished, but he's the gem. The knowledge is all there. The Rambams, I mean, what the Rav knew already at that time. The basis is there. Rabbi Chaim Hella more is an image. And that's why perhaps my interpretation of the Mutter Yukno Shel Aviv Niratolo B'Chalon is correct, and it reflects and explains the love and the intimacy of the relationship between Rabbi Chaim and the Rav. And it's a theory. Perhaps I'm right. There's a lot to say that I'm correct. It makes sense. It fits together like a glove and a hand. But I can't be certain. And that's the difference between when the Avodat HaMelech quotes the Rav, that we're certain about. The theory, I hope I'm right. Yes, David.
Okay, now that we have variant readings, what
Well, no, you talk about variant readings. Nafkamina can be halacha lemaisa. I mean, there can be tremendous nafkamina. One of you chayev, one of you not chayev. You saw very simply last week, call him mekim or call him makayim. Halacha lemaisa, there's a tremendous difference. If a person, if you hold it's call him mekim, then if you have a matzeva lavoda zarin, you don't knock it down, you're not chayav. But if it's call him makayim, you're chayav. Mamash alav. No. Say that what you're raising is a different question. You're raising a very fascinating question. You're raising the question that if we acknowledge, and it's obvious, that the variant readings, and that there can be various understandings of certain Gemaras, and you don't have to go further again, then a difference in the Machlokes, the Rambam, the Rif, or the Chachmei Sfarad, the Chachmei Ashkenaz. I mean, after all, what does it go back to? It goes back to real text. It's not a Machlokes that developed out of thin air. So you're asking a very powerful question. You're asking, when you have variant readings, So I'll put the question even sharper. You're asking a conservative scholar, a member of a Jewish theological seminary, can say, well, if you have these variant readings, why not another variant reading? And I'll put the question even sharper. And this question goes back to where you asked the question, you don't realize what you hit upon here. Because this is the whole question with Bernard Revel Graduate School. Why are you getting so involved with variant readings and research and recreating? After all, we have a halacha. So the question is a very powerful question. On the first level, as far as the conservative movement goes, the answer is yes, there can be variant readings, variant traditions. But once the halacha crystallizes, we cannot interfere with the halacha. And that's the famous letter of the Chazon Ish, who articulates it very beautifully. That's the letter I'm referring to when he wrote Chazon Ish, volume 1, letter Lamed Bet, Lev, where the Chazon Ish says that if you're going to start looking for variant readings and base your halacha or base your understanding of Gemara upon every new discovery, ein l'dav asof. Because who tells you that what you have now is the latest? How do you know you're not going to find something else a year from now, 10 years from now? The Vatican Library will be explored. Who knows what will be fine? And this is where you have a concept of Hashgacha Pratit. There's a certain Masorah. This is the way the Masorah developed. This is the Halacha. This is the way they paskin. These were the texts that the Gedolei Rishonim had before them. And you can't throw out all of Yiddishkeit on the basis of a variant reading, which may or may not be correct. That's the Chazon Ish. And that's the way to approach the conservative movement. With the second question, which flows from the first, it's a fascinating question. Now, this question has been asked, you know, among the Chokrei Yisrael, many of them were strictly observant. On the other hand, sometimes their writings did deviate from the accepted tradition. Reb Simcha Meir Feldblum is a simple example. Reb Simcha Meir, and I've described many times, he was a survivor. He was a brilliant, he was an Eloi. At a young age, I believe, already he was in Tells. He had tremendous knowledge. And he survived during the partisans and in the forest. I mean, what these people went through to survive is indescribable. And Rav Meir Simcha, I met people who recalled him as a little boy in the forest. And I remember they're telling me that as long as Kolzman they were with him, they knew that they would survive. He was so broad, he was so brilliant. Now, mind you, those crucial years, he couldn't study a word. I don't know when he went into the forest, but let's assume 41, 42, 43, 44, 45, until liberation. Imagine all these years, how much could he study? Think what life was like, hiding from the Nazis. Then he comes to America, and he's one of the Rav's best Talmidim. He learned B'chavruta with a fellow, he's not alive anymore, Caseman, Zichrono Livracha. They were both survivors, and they're learning B'chavrusa. Caseman died young. Simcha Feldman's life was filled with tragedy. His first wife was killed very tragically in front of the yeshiva. The locals were having races with their cars, drag races, and she was crossing the street and they ran her over. She was a little woman, a wonderful woman. She was the daughter of Rav Yalas of Philadelphia, the mother of Rav Simcha Meir's children. It was a terrible tragedy, which until today has its effects. At least one of the children is not from, and it's a direct result of that tragedy. And then he remarried and he came in Aliyah. But while he was in yeshiva, he got involved in Bernard Rebbe graduate school, and he became a Talmud Mufakar Professor Avraham Weiss. And the Rebbe used to cry, I'm translating it from Yiddish into English, but the Rebbe used to cry that I'm afraid that Professor Weiss robbed my Meir Simcha from me, because he started to publish and he already published in a different vein. So he came out, I remember, with an article that caused him a lot of fame, or it became infamous, depending upon which way you looked at it. Came out with an article in Eidei Mesira Kate and Eidei Chatima Kate. The question in Gittin, he's a great expert in Gittin. He wrote his doctorate, actually, on variant readings, on halacha and inferences with the variant readings in Mesechet Gittin. And he came out with Eidei Mesira Kate, Eidei Chatima Kate, and he came out with a whole Chesber and a whole Chakira, which basically absolutely went against Rav Rishonim. Although there was one sheet that he based it upon, but it was the sheet of the Chuya. So I remember they asked him, how can you engage in such research if after all it goes against the grain of the Rishonim? And he answered very simply, that research is one thing, halacha is another thing. He says, when it comes to halacha, I have to follow the Shulchan Aruch, I have to follow the Shulchan Aruch Nanosei Kenegu. If that's the way the halacha was paskin, that's what obligates every Jew. When it comes to research on a theoretical level, everything is open to me. And I have every right to do research, and as long as I find the viewpoint that in the Rishonim that validates mine, although the majority may go against my viewpoint, and the halacha was not codified this way, nevertheless I have a right to follow that viewpoint. And that's what Rav Meir Simcha said. What's interesting is, I heard that in his name in the 60s. This exploded. You can check, because his doctorate, it's all published. This has to be the 60s, early 70s. Afterwards, I know his volume comes out. It comes out in the perhaps late 60s. It can be checked out. And then I went in Aliyah, but I remember after I left, following his wife's death, it reaches crisis proportions at Yeshiva. And those of you who know the history of Yeshiva and Rav Meir Simcha and the tragedy, Rav Heschel Shechter and the Rav, there was a whole issue. And ultimately, Rav Meir Simcha felt uncomfortable in the Yeshiva, and he came in Aliyah. He went to Bar Ilan, where he fit in like a glove on a hand. It's a different atmosphere there and a different set of rules. But when I came in Aliyah, I met some of the people at Hebrew University. And I was amazed. I met people that mamish don't miss a minyan. I'm not talking about shachris. They don't miss a mincha, don't miss a marv. Yet occasionally, in their publications, you found thoughts that were entirely off the beaten path. Mamish bordering on apikorsit, because it goes against the grain of the way we understand Chazal and the way the halacha is paskind. And I asked some of these people, and I got exactly the same answer. That as far as observance goes, the observance has to be according to the Shulchan Aruch. As far as Chachmat Yisrael and research goes, there everything is open. There are no limits. There's nothing that fences you in. So I got exactly the same answer. And this seems to be the way Chachmat Yisrael follows. I remember the Rav. One time he referred, and it's amazing how this all comes back to me, certain comments he made in Chachmat Yisrael, which at the time we glossed over. But he made an interesting comment. He spoke about in Yerushalayim, he's told that there are people who came in Aliyah from Vienna that yet studied in the Vienna-based Medrash. This is one of the famous Hochschul, is one of the famous advanced study programs that dealt in Chachmat Yisrael. So the Rav said that he's told that these people still use their umbrellas on Shabbos in Yerushalayim. They have to show that this is where they came from, and this is the halacha. So at the time, you know, I was a kid, I didn't really know what was happening. So I asked around, so they explained to me the whole machlokes, you understand, with an umbrella on Shabbos, whether it's an ohel harai. You understand, when you open up an umbrella, it's not an ohel kavu, it's an ohel harai, because you're going to close the umbrella, it's not something permanent. So there's a question. Now, we paskin, you can't use an umbrella on Shabbos. I've yet to see one posek that paskins that you can use an umbrella on Shabbos. But it seems in this base medrash, they paskin, they already had a tradition that an umbrella is an ohel harai, and there's no gezeirik here, and it's muta megikah hadin. And if there's an erev and you're allowed to carry, you're allowed to use an umbrella. And when these people came in Aliyah, they continued the traditions in Yerushalayim. Now, what's fascinating about the Rav's comment is he didn't say it with anger. In other words, he didn't say it as if they're apikarsim. He didn't say it to dismiss them. But he said it as if to say that this is one time that the Chachmei Yisrael, or the Chachmei Yisrael, allowed their theoretical research to affect the halacha lemaisa. So this is the way I understand the Rav. Now, you see, there's one other side to the coin which I alluded to last week. And again, it's theory. And I'm very hesitant to tell you that my theory is right. Well, theory is a theory. We hope it's right. See, there may be another side of the coin too. The subsequent development of Chachmat Yisrael in America, Jewish Theological Seminary, the Rav saw it only led to conservative Judaism. So this too may have buttressed the Rav in his feelings that the way to go is Talmud Torah, and he never allowed Chachmat Yisrael to enter the foray. And here there's the famous story which I portray in my book. It's an interesting story, and this is an absolute true story. I heard the story, Reb Heschel Schachter writes up the story. I heard the story from the Rav. I heard the story from Aaron Lichtner, but I heard it from the Rav. I heard it from the Rav twice. Twice I heard the story from the Rav. Once in the 50s, and once via tape in the 70s. And that's the story with the Rav where there's a family bris. And at the family bris, Professor Liebman and the Rav are sitting together. Now, I have to say, when the Rav told the story publicly, he didn't mention the name of who the person was. And I really didn't know. I used to guess. I used to give theories who it was. Turned out I was guessing. I was overstating the case. Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein knew that Liebman and the Rav were distantly related marriage. Professor Liebman was married Professor Liebman was married to the granddaughter of the Netziv. He was married to Reb Meir Berlin's daughter. I think her name was Yehudit Berlin. It can be checked out. I have the name in my book. I believe it was Yehudit, but it can be checked out. So Professor Reb Shaul Liebman was married to the daughter of Reb Meir Berlin, Reb Meir Bar Ilan, who was the granddaughter of the Netziv. Obviously, the Netziv was a great-great uncle of the Rav. You understand? So there was a relationship there. They knew each other, not just from scholarship, but they knew each other as family. So they come together at this Brit Mila. And there are eyewitnesses to this, but the Rav loved to tell the story that the Professor Liebman says to the Rav that they just found the manuscript that a Kohen is Muzer on Tumat HaSheretz. That a Kohen cannot be Matami himself Tumat HaSheretz at all times. Now, all of you know, if there are any Kohanim in the room, all of you know that a Kohen cannot be Matami himself to a dead human being. And this remains even today. It has nothing to do with the laws of Tumah V'Tara. It has to do with the Kedushat Kohen. But there's no halacha that a Kohen can't be Matami himself to a sheretz. If you're matami yourself to a sheretz, you're matayah yourself. This is the halacha. You all know that Jews have to be tar when they enter the Beis HaMikdash. This is why around the Chagim, every Jew has a chazak of chaver. Kol Yisrael chaverim, it's a famous Yerushalmi. And the pshat means that every Jew has a chazak of tahara. You can be depended upon as far as ritual matters go, because we can be certain he was matayah himself. So a Kohen, if you matami yourself to sheretz, you go to you matai yourself. What's the big deal? And this manuscript says that there's mamish tuma for a Kohen. That is mamish musa. That it's like tuma tamet. So the Rav looked at Professor Liebman, and the Rav made the comment. When telling the story, he says the following comment. It's very fascinating. It's what you asked, David. The Rav says, I'm putting now Professor Liebman's name in. Professor Liebman was out to get me. But he doesn't have a problem with this. Because those that aren't Torah Jews or aren't Orthodox Jews, they go with two traditions, three traditions, four traditions. And therefore, Professor Liebman didn't have a problem. He can just say, well, there were other traditions that contradicted what became afterwards the rabbinic tradition. So, but the Rav, and the Rav made that comment, again, very revealing, very revealing. See, what I'm saying now, I feel bad because I'm afraid to write this. On the other hand, there's no one else in the world that perhaps can say what I'm saying now. Because you have to remember, I have a memory for these things. You know, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein knows all of Shas backwards and forwards by heart, every Rishon by heart. I don't know that. I wish I had that type of memory. But for these stories, I remember inside out, and it reveals, the Rav made that comment. He has many traditions. I don't. Think what the Rav is saying. Then the Rav And this is, of course, the famous story. The Rav said to him, he said, I picked the name of a person that I knew Professor Liebman didn't think highly of. And you got to know, in scholarship, scholars are like politicians. I hope Rosh Yeshiva are not like that. That's all I can say. But politicians hate each other with a passion. Scholars hate each other with a passion. They're always putting each other down. Each one says the other guy's scholarship is worthless. It's horrible. When a book appears from a guy's nemesis, he doesn't even look at it. Right away, he's looking for the faults, the problems, to puzzle it out. So the Rav evidently mentioned another name. For the sake of argument, let's say he said to Professor Liebman, and I'm saying this. He says, Professor Liebman, was trachte wegen, what do you think about Professor Ephraim Elimelech Orbach? Liebman jumps out of his chair. I'm Oretz, boor, idiot, not a scholar, a nitwit, doesn't know a word. He's cursing him out. He's going crazy. At that moment, the Rav says, no, what do you think? We have a monopoly on Ratzit in this generation? He says, at the time of the Goyim, there were also Amayaretz. But they wrote on manuscripts. They didn't have paper like we have today. So we found a manuscript from written at the time of the Goyim. It's an Amayaretz, a boor, just like Professor Rohrbach. So what? What does that have to do with tradition? And that's the rough. See, it's a very, very fascinating answer. Fascinating. Now I'll tell you, I'll tell you one more thing. I don't know, I'm just opening my heart today because I feel bad. No one else knows what I'm about to tell you now. Again, it's being lost as time marches on. But it's me'inyan li'inyan lo to'inyan. And I'll tell you something, and I want to say a few words of hesped. Last Wednesday, an isha gedola died, an isha gedola, gedola ma'od. She was Batsheva Hutna, who Bezivik Rishon was Batseva Soloveitchik. I know her from the day I entered Yeshiva in 1951, when I entered MTA, a little frightened bunny rabbit, and she and Reb Shmuel, the Rav's middle brother, lived across the street from the Yeshiva with the mother. I mean, I know her from day one. And she was the daughter of a great Rav from this. Her father was Bryanska Rav. He succeeded Reb Shimon Shkup in Bryansk. Ziv, I believe it was Rabbi Yaakov, if I recall the Avelut sign was Rabbi Yaakov Moshe, but it can be checked. And her father died when she was three, and she went through the whole hell. She wound up being raised in Moscow, in relatives, the home of relatives. It's from the Panovich family. Ian, do me a favor. Are you going back soon? Can I give you mail? It's my mother's mail. I appreciate it. It's Kibbutz Aviyim, and it's a chesed. Okay. So, she wound up being raised in Moscow, and she had to teach for the communists. Anyway, she got to America with miracles. The communists could have sent her to Siberia because she asked to leave Russia. Instead, they let her go to Kobe, Japan, and she didn't have to go to Shanghai. There was a Rabbi Sam Chill who arranged an affidavit for her. She got into America. She married Rav Shmuel Soloveitchik. When I was a kid, she was famous as Rebbetzin Soloveitchik, the most famous teacher in Beis Yaakov in Washington Heights. At the funeral were tens and tens of women in their 40s and 50s crying, so it was their Rebbe Mufak, their Rebbetzin Mufheket, if I can put it that way. She had influenced their lives. They came in Aliyah. She married Bezivik Sheni after Rav Shmuel died in 68. She married Rabbi Yeshua Hutna, whose first wife had died of cancer, and it was 30 years of a beautiful, blessed marriage, so much so that at the funeral, I was overwhelmed. Rabbi Hutna announced that he wants everyone to know that his desire is he be buried next to Hatzadeket Batsheva Liachamei V'Yasum Shanan. Remember, he had a child with his first wife. He had no children with his second wife, and yet he said he wants to be buried next to his second wife. She was a unique woman. So Rav Yehoshua told an interesting story yesterday. He's close to 90. His body is weak, but his mind is perfect, absolutely perfect. So Rav Yehoshua, he's a first cousin to Rabbi Yitzchak Hutna of Chaim Berlin. He tells the following story. He says that Batsheva wanted to do a doctorate in Jewish education, but it never worked out. She got a master's, but she never got a doctorate. But she said his niece, his cousin rather, Bruri Yehutna, the daughter of Rav Yitzchak Hutna, did a doctorate. My wife, by the way, knew her yet from Hunter. She's my age. She was a little older than my wife. Bruri is my age. She did a doctorate at Columbia in Jewish education, whatever it was. So Rav Hutna said, if you go to Columbia University today and request a doctorate, you know, every school has to keep the doctorates that were done in the university. People got the Rav's doctorate from Berlin, by the way, but it's not been published. It's interesting. It's in German. It's not been published yet. You can get the doctorate. It's no big deal. So Columbia U will tell you, Bruria Hutner, we have no copy of her doctorate. We have a note here. If anyone wants to see her doctorate, they have to ask her. So then you go to Dr. Hutner, who lives in, if I'm not mistaken, she lives in Hanover, in Mat, wherever she lives today, Matterstuff, whatever it is. So you go to Bruria Hutner's, Rav Hutner's only child, and ask her, can we see your doctorate? She makes believe she never got a doctorate. Oh, I don't even know what you're talking about. You know, she double talks to you, and that's the end of her doctorate. Now, what does this lead me to? Now, who can tell me? Who knows the history of yeshiva? See, there's no one knows. At YU, no one but no one could ever see Rabbi Belkin's doctorate. The doctorate was sequestered. It was hidden. You're looking to the catalog. He did a doctorate at Brown University. He did a doctorate on Philo, on all the problems. And doctorate is not there. Not there. I request that, you know, when I became a little wiser, but let's say I was a kid in the 50s, but by 1960 already I knew something. I was in graduate school. Requested the doctorate. Not there. And that was the button, the yeshiva. No one but no one can see Dr. Belkin's doctorate. It's up because it doesn't want anyone to see it. So when I came in Aliyah, in a Shemaim Zikuni, I worked for 2 years for the Encyclopedia Judaica. I had free access to the Hebrew University. One of the first things I did when I got here at the National Library, Hebrew U, the campus, I requested Dr. Belkin's doctorate. Lo and behold, I get the doctorate. I read it from cover to cover. I couldn't believe what I was reading there. Varying traditions, varying Kabbalah, the rabbinic tradition, the Falonian tradition, the Sadducee, you know, everyone, Chochmat Yisrael. So when I finished it, I said, now I understand why they hid the doctorate. But now the question comes back. How can you get involved in that level? The question we asked 20 minutes ago. But that's the answer. You understand the way they would answer? When it comes to study, I can study everything. I can have every tradition. But when it comes la halacha la maisa, I have to follow the Shulchan Aruch HaNos HaKeinim. That's the way they would justify it. That's the answer to your question. But the question is a powerful question, and I was always hunted by it. But Dr. Belkin, you can check me out. The only place in the world where you can get it is Hebrew University, and go through it. If you're familiar with the scholarship, you'll understand what I'm saying, that area. But that's the way Dr. Balkan would say. Dr. Balkan would say, I don't paskin la halacha like this. This is the various traditions. This is scholarship. Halacha la maisa, I do like a Jew does. He would answer me like Rabbi Feldblum. But as far as the yeshiva, as the years moved on, and American Orthodoxy became dynamic and powerful, Dr. Belkin, being schizophrenic as he was, never wanted anyone to see the side of him. So when my wife told me the story Rabbi Hutner told yesterday about Bruria Hutner, today her name is David. She married Rabbi David, a Talmud Mufak of Rav Hutner. The minute I heard that story, Ra'ah Halacham, paraphrasing the Gemara in Psachim, V'nishka Masa. Okay, so this sums up what I wanted to say last week, but it's an important addendum. And it opens your eyes to Chochmat Yisrael, it opens your eyes to the Rav, it opens your eyes to the whole interaction. However, separate the theory from the fact. When I say the Avodat HaMelech quoted the Rav, that's fact. When I say that the Rav considered himself a son of Rav Chaim Helevesif to speak, that's fact. When I give a theory, he chose this one, that one, or I quote Mark Shapiro, that's theory. Theory, we hope we're right. We can't be certain. Okay, yes, Daniel, you had your hand up. Oh yeah, the doctorate deals with the doctorate was done on the professor. See, another explanation was that this is what Dr. Belkin really believed is what his professors wanted him to write. He wanted the doctorate. I don't know. But it's very different. You'll see, it's various theories. And in Philo and Oral Law, he shows Philo Taka knew the Oral Law and kept the oral tradition. That was Dr. Belkin's big hop that he goes against all the other scholars that try to show that Philo was an apikoris. And say that he goes against the trend. That's all I can say. Okay, now I have something today. It's not only fascinating, but I'm going to show you something very interesting at the very start of this year. Now let me say a few words about the Rav and. Let me say a few words. By the way, I'd like to dedicate this year in memory of Rebbetzin. Batsheva Hutner, her name was Batsheva Taiba. I think the original name was Taiba. I don't know whether Batsheva was her original name or that later she took a Hebrew name when she saw that Taiba is not exactly a name you can use in the YU world. But she was an Isha Gadolah, Mamish an Isha Gadolah. And I know her so many years. And as you know, I've lived with death these last the last 6 months, all I've lived with is death. My stepfather, my father-in-law, Batsheva Hutner, who was my neighbor now for under 30 years, etc. Now, when it comes to Pesach, obviously, the Rav said endless Sheyurim on Pesach. He said in Moria, he used to say in YU, he said in Boston. Inevitably, he repeated himself. My wife is upset. She's going through, we're going through the whole, the work together now. We're still not finished with the initial reading, but we're on the way. I hope, Yisrat Hashem, to be able to carry back the manuscript as it should be published when I go in a few weeks, in 2 weeks' time. But anyway, be it as it may. Be it as it may. So my wife says, you know, there's repetition here, repetition there. I'm going to add a word to the introduction. Of course there's repetition. It's an anthology. And there's certain themes that the Rav constantly repeated. These themes motivated his life. Something he said once was minor. But when he repeats something 5-6 times in the course of a lifetime, 500 or 600 times, these were things that motivated his life. When it comes to Inyanei Haggadah and Inyanei Pesach, time and again you'll see the same theme repeated, analyzed, viewed perhaps a little differently. There's no question there's repetition. On the other hand, if we could take and put together all the things the Rav said on Pesach in Boston, Yeshiva U, and in Moria, you probably could fill 5 volumes of Chidushim just on Pesach and on the Haggadah. What Jitzi Lichtenstein put out is very small. It's mamish. First of all, he couldn't touch the Haggadah. Yes, there's a Haggadah, you know, the Haggadah HaGrid that put out by his grandson. So I asked the Yitzi, why didn't you deal with the heart of your grandfather's Chidushim, the Haggadah, the Hashkafa, it was overwhelming. Yitzi said to me, he can't deal with it. He just doesn't have that ability to write up Haggadah. He's Kulo Ish Halacha, Yitzi. Okay? So it's very nice from the point of view of Halacha, but even there, a lot is lacking. It's only 1/100th of what could be put in. Now, the shiur I'm going to give now is one of my favorite shiurim early. You'll understand why I got to it at a certain point, if not today, next week. It was given in Moria, March 21st, 1972. So the date also is very fascinating. March 21st, 1972. This is at the time where the Rav is still all-powerful mind-wise, although the tragedies of the late 60s and old age are starting to show their effects. Okay. Now, number one, and this is axiomatic. When it comes to the Haggadah, we don't read the Parshiyot from Sefer Shmot. Logically speaking, someone's going to wake you up in the middle of the night, again, Balabatasha Seichel, someone wakes you up in the middle of the night, what Parshiyot should we use to talk about Yetziat Mitzrayim? What Parsha? What are you talking about? Parsha Bar. There's nothing better than Parshat Bo. HaChodesh HaZalachem, Rosh Chodeshim. Everything we're taught about. Yetziat Mitzrayim, Vayechi B'chatzot HaLaila, B'shalach. I mean, there's so much there. And instead of using the Parshiyot from Shmot, what do we use? Aromi Ovei Davi. In other words, all of you know that the whole Haggadah, the whole Dashanut, is from Arami Avo Davi, which is from Devarim Chafav Pasuk Hei. We use a Pasha from the Varim. But not only that. It's not only that you have to read a Pasha from the Varim, but you have to dashen the Pasha. That you must say drush on the Pasha. If you just read Arami, Oved Avi, Ve'yedu Mitzrayim, and Mitei Ma'at, and every Ve'otzi'enu, and everything else, if you just read the Pasha alone, you are not Yotzei Chovatcha. Now, here the Rav quoted, see this is interesting. Here the Rav quoted, the Rav said, it's not just that you're not Yotzei Yehovah, but he said that there's a Tshuvah HaGoinim, that if you don't read the Pasha properly, Rav Natranoi Gon quoted in the Seder of Avram HaShalem, you are an apikoros. You are a sinner. what a source the Rav quoted. Now, the Rav quoted Shuvat HaGolim. He didn't go into detail. See, this is where no one had the knowledge or no one had the guts to ask the Rav. Where did he see the source? What is he quoting? Is it secondary or is it primary? Did he see the actual source? People involved in scientific Jewish scholarship already, when you talk about quoting from the Gaonim, you're going into one of the most fertile, seminal fields of research. That until today, that field has not been completed. You understand? Is either Rav quoted something here. The minute you quote a Tshuva Gaonim, it puts you one rank above a regular Rosh Yeshiva. You understand what I'm saying? Rosh Yeshiva deal with Shas and Paiskim, Rambam, Ravit, Rishonim. You rarely will hear a Rosh Yeshiva quote a Tshuva HaGoinim unless it's quoted, let's say, by the Nosei Kelim of the Rambam. You with me? The Kesef Mishnah times will quote a Tshuva HaGoinim, fine. If he sees it in the Kesef Mishnah, of course he's going to quote it. The question, see, what was the Rav quoting? We don't know. No one asked him. See, it'd be interesting if I could speak with Rebbe today on this level, I would ask Rebbe, what did you see actually? Now, for your edification, I'm going to quote the source for you. And here it's very fascinating. We have the Seder Rab Amram Gaon. It's mamish like a Seder. It's like a Siddur. He puts all the prayers together, all the ritual together, everything we have to do. And this Seder Rab Amram Gaon, we now have a beautiful scholarly edition. We have the Mossad Rav Kook edition, edited by Daniel Goldschmidt, Zichrono Levracha. Anyone recognize the name Daniel Goldschmidt? He lived right around the corner from where I live, right where Jack lives, was down the block from Old Rivka. Daniel Goldschmidt was a Yeki. The old time Yeki, Talmidei Chachamim, Medaktikin B'mitzvol, Skala Kachamura, and he was the greatest person in the world in manuscripts of prayer. Those of you who grew up here or don't have to use art scroll, what kinus does everyone use here? It's the Goldschmidt kinus. You understand? His edition. What slichus do you use here? The Goldschmidt slichus. The man was a walking encyclopedia of information on Kitvei Yad, Gaonic literature, slichus, liturgical literature. You understand all this literature. How do you edit it? What does it mean? What are the references? Okay, so now I'm quoting from the Mossad Rav Kook edition, Chelik Bet, Siman Pei, Amud Kuf Yud Aleph. And it's this part of the Shia unto itself is very fascinating. By the way, are you familiar? Who did the most basic work on Gaonic literature that until today no one has equaled him? Rabbi Binyamin Menashe Levine. Does anyone know what I'm referring to? The Otzer HaGoinim. Look at it in the library. He died, I believe, in the middle of Bava Tzia. He never finished it, and basically his work remains unfinished. What he didn't finish, attempts have been made, Sanhedrin, was never finished properly. Who was Rabbi Binyamin Menashe Levine? Who was he? Gentlemen, where do you take your tefillin to be checked? You know Marty the Sofer, Moshe Flumenbaum? Know what I'm talking about? Marty, Moshe, the OU Center, BMT boy. Fellas, look at me. The famous Sofer is that big shop when you come in to the OU Center, to your right. It's owned by Marty Flumenbaum. Moshe, he is married to Rabbi Naman Benashe Levine's granddaughter. A Levisa, she was my student at Michala. There were two sisters. One is married to Rabbi Eli Krumbein, Rosh Hashiva and Alon Shvut. Rabbi Krumbein is married to a granddaughter, Rabbi Yom Menashe Levine. Who was Rabbi Yom Menashe Levine? Very fascinating. He was a Talmud in Mekas Rav. He was a Talmud Mufak of Rav Kook. And then he got a Yetzer Hara or a Yetzer Tov, depending upon your outlook, Avi. He wanted to go to Hebrew University. Hebrew University had just opened. So instead of telling him not to go, it's treif, it's pasul, Shlomo, you follow me? So Rav Kook told him, go, but learn something that will help Torah scholarship. And he became a great master of Gaonic literature. And he devoted his life, what he put out. Otsar Goinim, look at it. It's all the Tshuva and it's the Perushim. It's a classic work. It's never been equaled. Of course, nowadays it's already outdated because so much more was discovered since he worked on this work in the 1920s into the 1930s. And he was a poor man. He lived in poverty. He had to raise money to put out each volume. It was Kriyat Yonsef, what these people went through and what they produced under such conditions. Now, watch this quote. V'chein omar Rav Natrani resh metifta. Mishomer, this is calling Rav Natrani Gaon now. This is Goinim Shebegoinim. By the way, a two-volume set just came out of Rav Natrani of all his chidushim and everything that exists in the manuscript. A YU graduate, a fellow named Brody, a fabulous fellow, lives in Katamon. It's a whole story. He's was in MIT, getting a brilliant fellow, getting a doctorate, and he heard a lecture by Shragai Abramson in Gaonic literature, and that lecture changed Professor Abramson's Zichrono Levracha, changed his whole life, and he came to Hebrew, you got a PhD, he's going to be the biggest person in the world in Gaonic literature in due course. So, and Rav Natrani Gaon is now describing Seder night. What is he saying here? That a person that just says Kiddush, and then he just quotes the Pesukim. The Korei Aromi Aveda V'Al Chikamah Kala Pashakula Pesukim Kamo Shehein V'Ein Omer Midrash Klal. And he doesn't say the Midrash at all. He does a mini Haggadah. You understand? This is fabulous. This is like when you do a Seder in a hotel. Everyone's in a rush to eat. You understand? So this guy has a format here. This is fabulous. He just says the psukim. And Arami Aveda V doesn't say one word of drash. V'omer Rabbi Gamliel, V'ashega Alnu, V'halel. Teima Godol B'dova Chazer. I have tremendous questions. How is he allowed to do this? Now, you fellas should be wondering, what's going on here? Nowadays, people do this. Jews don't want to waste time at a Seder. And they understand. I've already been in positions where I had to conduct a starim. I always had a simple theory to conducting a public Seder. The first part, you go quickly. After the meal, you slow down. You understand what I'm saying? People are hungry. The first part, just say what you have to say. The dashanut, do afterwards. But chas v'chalila, you understand? Rule of the thumb. People are hungry. Also, when you have little children, it's very, very important. There's my famous story. Jack knows one of my classic stories of Aaron Rakefet. In the early 70s, BMT had two kids. Two kids came in. It was 70, 71, 71, 72. So these kids had grown up in Crown Heights. So they went, spent the Shabbos on a lunch foot, and Rabbi Lachsin had a ball with them. Of course, they still had the same memories, the same school, the same teachers, because Rabbi also had gone to Crown Heights Yeshiva before he went to Chaim Berlin. So these kids had so much in common. So Rabbi invited the kids to his Seder, Leil HaSeder. So the kids are all excited. The kids, you know, are boasting, and I was BMT then, it was my whole life. And the kids are telling me, Rebbe, we're going to Rabbi Lichtenstein Seder, can you believe it? You know, and then these weren't exactly kids, because before the Yom Kippur War, you came to Israel and you were either junior in college or after. These kids were about 21, 22, whatever it was. So I tell them, listen, I want to give you some advice. You're going to Rabbi Lichtenstein Seder, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, have a good bar of chocolate. A good, healthy bar of chocolate. So these kids looked at Rebbe and said, listen to me. Do what I'm telling you. I meet the kids afterwards. They say, Rebbe, you saved our lives. What pshat? They said, you would have starved. The Seder began. Rabbaran says to his kids, they were all little children then. He says, now what would happen if I would have robbed the matzah? And it's not my matzah, it's matzah gezula. Would be biyotze. And for an hour they went on, lulav hagazel, and the matzah, and the kiyum, and the mitzvah, and the eating, and David Yeshban, and whatever. Then they finally reached about 20 minutes before the afikomen, before chatzos, they finally reached the meal. They had to quickly eat, rushed, barely had time. Poor guys, that we would have starved to death. Baruch Hashem, we listened to you and had the candy bar. But that's the pshat. Do you understand? It's a real problem. People are hungry. So you have to have seichel here. Say what you have to say. But here, this guy, what's going on here? Tema Gadol Bazeh. Here this guy, they're saying that just the psukim. It's really, he's what I call a real type of das. He's really corrupt, the Steha Gadol. What's happening here? Ah. Nuk, does anyone understand what's happening here? Ah. Then Rav Natraigo goes, Misha Noi Gvinigzeh Ain't Sarek Loma Shalayatza Elekom Misha Asa Kain Minhu V'chaluk Leivhu V'kofe B'divrei Chachomim U'boze D'ivrei Mishnah V'talmud V'chayavim Kol Akilach N'dolto U'lit Labdil U'miklal Yisrael. Oh my gosh. He goes crazy. What you got to do to this guy? Even Agudat Yisrael doesn't talk this way about Reform Jews. And then he goes on. He says, what's the matter? These guys have hatred in their hearts. They hate the Mishnah. They hate the Talmud. Well, why didn't they say it properly? Ela halalu minim, umaligin, ubozen, divrei chachamim, v'talmidei anan, yirkav shmo, avi avav shel Daniel, she'amar lechol hatoyim v'azoinim acharav, v'izvu divrei mishnah v'talmud, v'ani eser lahim talmud sheli, v'adayin heim b'ta'utam, v'na'asu umali atzmam. Wow. V'achshav tzirichim l'ndontam shlo l'talelim Yisrael b'veit ha'kneset u'lavdilam ad she'chazvim l'mutav u'makablim aleim she'noigim k'mineg she'shtei ha'yeshivad she'kol mi she'noig minig she'lonu lo yatsa yedei chavato. So that this, what a source, historically, what a source. It gives you some idea of the machloket between the Karayim and the regular Jews, the intensity, the depth, the passion, the language, the enmity. Ribbono shel Olam. Fire comes out of the mouth of Rav Avram Goyen or Rav Natron Aigon, who's quoting here when they speak about the Karayim. But anyway, the source is fascinating. Where the Rav saw it, I don't know. Bells. But one thing we see from this, that Leil HaSeder, if you sit down and don't read the drash, you're not Yotzei Yochiyev. You are a terrible sinner. Why? Why are we so makbed? Why are we so makbed? And of course, this was the Rav's famous fart, because Sipu Yetziat Mitzrayim, you see, all year long, we all know there's a din in Haskarat Yetziat Mitzrayim. We all say Kriyat Shema, Leman Tizkeru, there's a din, Zecha, Litziyat Mitzrayim, Lahaski Yitziyat Mitzrayim. That evidently you're Yotzei by just reading the Torah. The Rav gave a whole Yotzei drasha on this. It's in the Shul and Zecha Abba Murray. But Leil Pesach, it's not a din in Zechirat Yitziyat Mitzrayim. It's a din in Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim. And when you have a din in Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim, the only way to do it is through Talmud Torah. And Talmud Torah means Torah Shebichtav with Torah Shebal Peh. You take the Torah Shebichtav and you dashen it with the Torah Shebal Peh. And you have to have both. The minute it's a din in Talmud Torah, the minute it's a din in Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim, and the Kiyam of Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim is through Talmud Torah, this already means both. The interaction of Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebal Peh. And that's why the Haggadah was ufgestelt the way it's ufgestelt. That's why the Haggadah was constructed the way it was constructed. And that's why Rav Amram Goyen was so makpid and Rav Nadra Goyen was so makpid. And that's why they saw the actions of the Karayim as being so sinful and so heinous, because it wasn't just that they made it the Haggadah smaller. It was that they absolutely uprooted the belief in Torah Shebaal Peh, the belief in the Dashanut of Chazal, and this was the sin, the crime of the Karayim, and this is the mitzvah of Leil HaSeder, when there's a dinim sipa, it has to be through Talmud Torah, and Talmud Torah has to be the mizug, the synthesis, the complementing, the supplementing of Torah Shebichtav with Torah Shebaal Peh. And the Rambam, the Rav said that the Rambam, when codifying this halacha, look at the language he used. Hilchat Chametz Matzah Perek Zayin Halacha Dalid. It's based, of course, upon the Mishnah in Arvei Pesachim. Ketzad matchil u'mesaper shebetchila hayu avoteinu bimei terach u'milafanav kofrim v'towin achar hachavel v'rotfim et achavel d'zara u'mesayim b'dat hanet shekivanu hamakam lo v'dilonu minatoim v'kivanu liyichudo v'chein matchil u'modiya shabadim hayinu lafar b'mitzrayim v'chol hara'a shegamalanu u'mesayim b'nisim v'niflat shenasu lanu u'bechirotenu. And this is the most, that's the whole description, the whole story. Now, what does it mean? If it would be a din in Kriya, there's no, how could you be Mosif in Kriya? Imagine this morning, a guy wants to read more than Vesot Chanukah. What's going on here? Kriya is Kriya. Either you're Yotzei, you're not Yotzei. You read the Sedra, you read the Sedra. There's no concept of being Marich in Kriya. But when it's a din in Dashanut, ain't l'davasof. When it's a din in Dashanut, kol ha-mosef u-marich b'drash pashezu, ha-reza meshubach. And that's the proof that it's a din in Torah Shebaal Peh. Torah Shebichtav, when it's a din in Kriya, the Rav used to say so many times, those of you familiar again with the Shirim Lezeich Abba Murray, a lot is published there on the Rav's Yotzei Shirim and Kriya Torah, where the Rav reached unbelievable heights. But the Rav always used to say, when it's a din in Kriya, it's Kiktava Ukulshana. You understand? Like the Megillah. Megillah Testa. It's a din in Kriya. Black and white. Aleph is Aleph, Bet is Bet. Either you read it or you don't read it. The minute you read it, you're Yotzei. When it's a din in Torah Shebaal Peh, ain't l'dav asof. There's no concept k'ktava kol shana. There's no concept to say, I have finished. Kol hamaber hareza mishubach. Okay? That's the Rambam. That's the way he, the terminology he used, that's the way he coined, the way he described this halacha, and this is exactly Rav Natronigai, Rav Amram Gaon, this is exactly the pshat, that Haggadah is a din in Dashanut. Sipo Yetziat Mitzrayim, Torah Shebichtav, but that's not enough, the Dashanut has to be through Torah Shebaal Peh, and this has a minimal, but it has no end. It can go on all night, it can reach every different proportion, as the Rav spoke about throughout the decades. Time and again, because this is brisk. You can understand why he loved this. This is brisk. This is the world he came from. Hareza Mishubach. Now, but if this is the case, we still have one question. Fine. We can understand the Haggadah. We can understand why Dashanut is so important. We can understand why we didn't just have Kriya from Torah Shebichtav. But why this Pasha? What is so unique? Pashat Bikurim, V'yanita V'yamatav Ne'ashem Elakecha, Rami Avei Devi, V'yatzveid Mitzrayim, V'yigashim Tom Mibnei Ma'at, V'yishom Degoy Gadol Atzim V'rav, V'yiroh Tonu Ha'mitzvim, V'yanunu V'yitun Lenu Avodok Hashah, V'yitzak Al-Hashem Okavateinu, V'yishma Hashem Et Kolenu, V'yat Yonyen, V'yitamalek Lachatzeinu, V'yatzeyenu Hashem Yitzrayim, B'yat Chazaka, B'zroon Et Tuya, B'mor Gadol, B'yotot U'vemavtim, V'yivyenu Al-Makam Hazeh, V'yitlenu Da'aretz Hazat, Eretz Savat, Chalav U'Dvash. Why this pasha? Okay. It deals with Yetzias Mitzrayim. But certainly, the much more fundamental dealing with Yetzias Mitzrayim is in many of the Pashiyot and Shemot. That's where you have the actual story, word by word, line by line. Why do we choose Pashat Bikurim? Why is this the touchstone? Everything begins. You can't get to the Torah Shebal Peh without beginning the Torah Shebichtav of this Pasha. Why? Why? And here again, it's a famous Chiddush of the Rav that I heard from him in so many different contexts over the years. And the Rav explained that, you see, when we want to choose a Pasha to talk about Yetziat Mitzrayim, if it would only be the actual story of Yetziat Mitzrayim, then ain't hachinami. The Pashiyot in Shmot are better, are more fitting, are more matim. Ain't hachinami. But you know what's involved in choosing a Pasha? It's telling the story, but a story that leads to Hillel v'Shibuach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It has to be a story that leads to Hallel v'Hoda'ah, Shir v'Shevach. It has a double goal, Tachlit Kfula, a double goal. What are the two goals? Yes, number one, to tell the story. That we cannot forget. That most important, we have to tell the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. But in telling the story, there also has to be Hallel to Shevach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When you look at the Pasher of Bikurim, that is the best Pasher in the Torah, where you have both, where you have a synthesis, where you don't just tell the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim, where you don't just tell the story of what we suffered, Vayotzeinu Hashem Mitzrayim, Biyad Chazaka, Bizroon Etuya, B'mor Gadol, V'yototuv Mopim, beautiful. But more than that, you have the story there, Vavienu Al HaMakam Hazeh, and God brought us to this land, gave us a beautiful land, and we are able to bring Bikurim, V'samachta B'kol HaTov, Ashenatan Lecha Hashem Elokecha. It's the Parsha that has not only the tragedy, but the salvation. Not only the suffering, but the deliverance. And that's exactly what the Rambam means. He stresses this. U'mesayim b'nisim v'niflot shenasu lanu. That we end off the Dashanut talking about the miracles God did for us. He took us out. He gave us the land. Baruch Hashem, we have first fruits. We can rejoice. So that this is the Pasha that has that magic synthesis where the story of the enslavement and the deliverance are complemented by the shouts of joy, the land, the Bikurim, the thanksgiving, the Hallel, the Shibuach. And that's why we chose this Pasha. And that's exactly what the Rambam is saying, and that's the Rav's tremendous insight into Pashat Bikurim. Okay. Not only the Rambam, Sefer HaChinuch. Again, the Sefer HaChinuch was a constant guest in the Brisker Beis Medrash. It's fascinating. Time and again, the Rav would go back to the Sefer HaChinuch, and you know, until today, we are not certain who wrote the Sefer HaChinuch. It's an amazing thing. Could you imagine a Sefer that's so important and so classic? A Baron Alevi, but we're not certain. Pashat Bo, Mitzvah Chaf Aleph. L'saper b'inyan l'tziat Mitzrayim, u'lahalel u'lashabeach l'shem yitbarach al kol hanisim shasalanu sham shenema v'igadat halavincha. Look at the words of the Sefer HaChinuch. L'saper mitzvah sipur yetziat Mitzrayim. U'lahalel u'lashabeach. We absolutely need both. So that Leil HaSeder, you just can't pick a Pasha from Sefer Shmot. The Pasha in Sefer Shmot, each Pasha is isolated. It speaks of the slavery, it speaks of the delivery. But there is no integrated Pasha where you have slavery, delivery, and thanksgiving. Hillel v'shibuach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this is why we chose the Pasha of Bikurim. It's not just a plain kriya, not just a plain sipur, but a sipur that has to bring the shira. And how do we achieve the shira? How do we embellish it? How do we enhance it? By the dashanut. And the minute you speak about dashanut, it means Torah Shebal Peh, and that's what we quoted before from the Rambam, Kolam Mosif, Umarich, Bedrash, Pashazu, Harei Ze Mishubach. And of course, now the Rav quoted the Tosefta, we referred to this, I don't remember if we did it this year, last year, in a different context dealing with Pesach, the Tosefta in Psachim, Perik Yud, subdivisions, Yud Aleph, Yud Bet. Famous Tosefta. Chayav Adam lasok b'hilchat ha-Pesach. Afilu beino levein atzmo. Beino leveito. Beino levein talmidol. So first of all, you see, this concept of itself, that Leil HaSeder, whether you're alone or whether you're with 1,000 people, the chiyav remains the same. It's a chiyav in Talmud Torah. You have to learn halachot of Pesach. Maisa b'rabim gamliel v'zkeinim shum esubim b'veito shebeitas ben zunim b'lud. Vahayu asukin behilchata pesach kol otolaila ad krot hageva. That the story is told, they were up all night and learning hilchach. What is micha? The greater your kiyum, the more you learn, hence the fulfillment of the Sit Mitzrayim. And that's exactly what the Tosefta is telling us. When it comes to the Haggadah, in the Haggadah, we say what we're limited to. The text, the basic text, the basic Dashanut. It's very limited. You're Yotze. But it's more than a Kriyat Pasha. If it's more than a Kriyat Pasha, it's Torah Shebal Peh. Torah Shebal Peh ain't Ladav itself. The longer you stay up, the later you stay up, the deeper you go, the more you learn, it's an endless kiyum. Beautiful. And that's brish, that's falashin. So what's the end result of this? You see very simply, no two people have the same kiyum Leil HaSeder. See, it's very fascinating. When it comes to Netilat Lulav and Etrog, watch, every Jew in the world is Yotzei the same way. As a matter of fact, when it comes to Netilat Lulav and Etrog, what are we worried about? When we pick it up, we have to pick it up upside down. Why do we have to pick it up upside down? Because the minute you pick it right side up, your yotze, you can't make a bracha anymore. Could you imagine your yotze? Finished. It's a Litvish approach. Chanukah candles. Hasidim go now to a Rebbe. Some of them, Rebbeim, they light Chanukah candles. Hasidim come. And I'm told the Rebbe sits there, he looks at the Hanukkah candles for a half hour, stares at them. And thousands of Hasidim look at the Rebbe looking at the Hanukkah candles. Gentlemen, I don't want to go further. Can you understand what this does to a Brisker, what this does to a Litvisher? B'nishalav. Go out of your mind. I don't want to start cursing like Yeruchim Gerelik, but you can go out of your mind just thinking of it. I saw pictures of one of the Rebbeim. I forget, one of the Rebbeim, not the more famous Rebbeim, but a Rebbe. You just blame B'nai Brak, no lack of Rebbeim. This is Hasidish. It's a different world. This is a different world. They need that world. I'm an arrogant Balgaiva. Baruch Hashem, I can be a good Jew without that world. But they need that world. I understand that. It's a fabulous world. I spoke about it last week. It's a fabulous world. But one second. Yotzei. I hate to tell you this, but the other day I was lying there, kind of something knocked over, a candle went out, a light went out. So I was playing with my wife. I said to her, honey, do I have to relight this candle? Relight this light? She said, yes. I said, no, I don't have to. I'll pee then. I'm relighting it anyway. I'm not a rusher. Al pi din, I lit it, there was enough oil in it for a half hour at least. It went out accidentally, I knocked it over. Pi din o shiotzei. Understand o shiotzei? I lit. It's not like someone who lights, I once saw in a shul, they light candles and then blow them out. 5 minutes later, they're afraid to leave the candles lighting after marv, whatever it is. That's already, that's tremendous shaila. It's a different story. But that's a litvak. You take a Lulven Etrog, you took the Lulven Etrog, you took it. You ate the Murray, you ate the Murray. Could you imagine a Jew is going to start the more lettuce, the more radishes, the more horseradish, the more, the better. He's going to look, Kavanish, they're going to go crazy. No, what am I referring to? Can anyone tell me what's the source? Gentlemen, Isha Halacha, the famous story in Haslovich, where Reb Moshe gets up to be Makri, and the Baal Tokeir is a Chabadnik who had just gone to Mikveh with all the Nistarim and all the Kabbalah, and he starts, and he's crying and crying, and Reb Moshe looks at him, the Rabbi Moshe, look at, what are you crying for? Do you cry when you take a lulav and etrog? This is a mitzvah and that's a mitzvah. Alright, that's mitzvah. We understand. Well, that's the Rav, the famous story in the Nish Halacha. When it comes to Talmud Torah, Ein Ladav Sof. That's the difference. Leil HaSeder, there's the basic fulfillment and the greater fulfillment, the enhanced fulfillment, the embellished fulfillment. You can buy a stock and it's worth $20, or you can buy a stock that's worth $10,000. If a chassid, a stam Jew, one of the young rabbis say, conducting a seder in a hotel, so the balabatame yod say, you did it, hey rabbi, that was a great job you did. It only took 28 minutes till we reached Shulchan Aruch. Alright, that was a great job you did. Yod say, you yod say. But, and then the seder finishes 12 o'clock, people can go to sleep. Then there's the person that's up to 3 in the morning. He's learning Hilchat Pesach, Hilchat Chametz and Matzah. He's learning the Haggadah Shel Hagrid. He's learning the Brishka Haggadah. He's up till 3 in the morning. There it's a greater Kiyam. See, you can't say Lulav Etrog. You follow me, Avi? That's the Rav's Chapia. It's Meiridik, it's Oiska Halton. This is the Tosefta. That's why the Tosefta. Look at the words in the Tosefta. This was Rebbe's Raya. V'chayav ma'asok b'hilchat ha-Pesach. Why did it say b'sipur ha-Pesach? Because Sipur ha-Pesach is the basic Kiyam. You've read the Pasha with the basic interpretation of Tavish Ba'Peh. Hilchat ha-Pesach ain't l'davasof. They were up all night. And that's the difference. Okay, this is point number one. David, what did you want to ask? David, you have to have a Hasidic soul to understand it. You understand? You have the Hasidic soul. When I was at Lubavitch, it was always overwhelming to me. The Rebbe, I cry for Lubavitch. I have no idea. I cry because you fellas laugh at Lubavitch. Understand? Your concept, I told someone, I spoke with a Talmud of mine in Florida yesterday. So I told him, I'm now teaching Talmidim who never saw the Rav. You never saw the Rav, you never saw Lubavitch. Your concept of Lubavitch, you crazies, messianists, morons, deviants. You're right. But Lubavitch was Lubavitch. But the Rebbe, 8,000 people, 10,000 around a Fabrengen, right? You don't drink till the Rebbe says L'chaim to you. So the Rebbe would turn like this. L'chaim shalom toivim. And as he would turn to each area, 1,000 people would swear the Rebbe said L'chaim to them. You understand? I looked at them, I didn't understand it like you. You have to have a Hasidic soul. You understand what I'm saying? I don't have, I have to admit, I can admire it. I perhaps understand it. They need it. It inspires them. It encourages them. But if I would sit and look at a Rebbe looking at Tzaddik candles for a half hour, it's not Aaron Rakefich, understand? I hate to tell you, I'm a learner. I suffered. This Shabbos made a minyan in my house. I spoke about Rabbi Huttner. He can't walk, so he made a minyan in the house. I told him on Shabbos I'm willing to say Kaddish, but he said he's going to go to his daughter and the shul is next door. It doesn't have a problem. So we made a minyan in the house. Minyan began 7:30. We finished like 10:15. I've never davened so long in a Shabbos morning since the last time I was in America. You understand? Shabbos is learning. You got to master Shas and Paiskin. You got to daven. 6:30. You're finished by all right. It's Hallel. It's Atayatzata. It's Al Hanisim. So you finish 8:05. You understand? But 7:30 to 10:15. I was plotzing. But I had to be punished there once in a while. That you has to daven properly. What can you do? But that's the difference. That's the difference. Okay, but that's a meridik vod. This is a meridik vod from the Rav. The Tosefta with the halacha. You can't escape that proof. Okay. Now I want to go further. I can't do too much, but now you'll have something. Ian, today I'm giving this is special for you. You're going into the rabbinate. Will you quote me? You'll say, I heard from my Rebbe, etc. You got it. In the name of the Rebbe. In the name of the Rebbe. You see, let me tell you what happened to me yesterday. You want to know the world we're in? I'm teaching a midrashet, and I'm walking up the steps, and a tall nurse from the nursing school, tall girl, I'm always amazed. The women are so tall today. Half of them are taller than I am. It's fabulous. So this is amazing to me, because I always grew up, women are short, and these women, and this woman comes over to me, Rabbi Rakefet, I want to tell you how much I enjoyed, and she tells me you're so famous, like she's looking at me and getting hana from looking at me, being inspired, I would say. And I'm looking at her, and I don't understand. I say, how do you know who I am? You know, she says, everyone knows who you are. I'm looking at her. Everyone knows who I am. Everyone should know who I am. But anyway, she heard my public talk at the NCS when she quoted back to me the heart of that talk. I said to her, well, I want to tell you that was a chap that I said. And I said, I'm going to use it in Miami because I see you were so impressed now, I'll use it in Miami. But anyway, she was looking at me like a chassidah. You understand what I'm saying? And I don't understand it. What am I to look at? Who am I to look at? Look what I look like. This is Rakefet. This is a bum, an oisvaf, a pushtak. You understand? But that's Rakefet. When all is said and done, that's Rakefet. It's a different world. You know what you remind me of, Jack? You heard the story. Look how it fits right in now. I was standing there. Bididi havayuvda. The Rav spent the Shabbos at the yeshiva. It was the only time I remember in the 50s into the 60s. Spent the Shabbos at the yeshiva. Mamish with his mother across the street, with the Rebbetzin, and I'll never forget, he had just given this tremendous shiur. It was the 50s at his absolute heights in halacha. Jack knows I spent 6 months in the kol on this, on Havdalah and Kiddush. And he reached the conclusion you have to sit for Avdallah because it's a din in Kviat Makom to break the Suddat Shabbat. Now you're going into Chol. Meridik. Yeah, I got to do it again in a few years' time just to refurbish my memory. Meridik. The height of heights. Everyone came to the yeshiva. The Rav is going to be there. I walked in from the Bronx. Everyone came. Time for Avdallah. Reese was the gabbai. Reese turns to Rebbe. Says, Rebbe, we'd like you to make Avdallah. 500 people sit down. The Rav said, who told you to sit? Who told you to sit? You know, he's amazed. He said, Rebbe, you just gave a shiur where you said, oh, he broke, you know, this was the Rav. He didn't even realize his influence. He just gave a yahrzeit shiur where he developed why you have to sit in Havdalah and he couldn't understand why 500 people sat down. He didn't realize. Then he finishes Havdalah. I'm telling you, as it happened. When I was a little kid, I pushed right up front. Right? I was in the Rav shiur, you know, whatever it was. I wasn't so little anymore. So Reese says, Rebbe, we want to thank you on behalf of the boys for coming, making our Shabbos. We hope you'll come back again and spend Shabbos with them. The Rav looks, he says, what do you need me here for Shabbos? What do you have to look at me davening? Was bin ich? What am I? A Hasidic Rebbe? You understand? He couldn't understand it. So that answers your question. You're asking the wrong person. But ask the Gera Rebbe or the Belzer Rebbe, there you'll get a different answer. Okay. Now I'll show you something amazing. Gentlemen, I'll show you Lumdis right in something that you've said since the time you were 3 or 4 years old. Joshua said this, and he never realized the Lumdis involved. What do we say next? What do we say next? If the Kiyum of Leil HaSeidah has to be Limud HaTorah, what do we say? Vafilu kulanu chachamim, kulanu nevonim, kulanu skenim, kulanu yodim et haTorah, mitzvah lesaper b'yitziat Mitzrayim. So the Rav told us, when he was growing up, he saw old Haggadot, and in the old Haggadot it didn't say kulanu skenim. Now watch what I did. I looked into the Frankel Haggadah, which the Rav was afraid to touch, and I looked in, and I saw in the Shinui Nischot that the Shinui Nischot brings down Kulanu Skenim, B'Yitzchayim U'Kitveya Teimanim, Leita, V'Kein Leita, B'Sefer HaMitzvot. Wow. The Rav was right. You don't have many manuscripts, the Rebbe was absolutely right. He saw an Agada in his youth. He saw an Agada. Many of the original Kitvayad do not have Kulanu Skenim. No, I want to ask a simple question. You know, you have to be a Lamdim. What does it matter? What's going on here? What's the deal? Afilu kulanu chachamim, kulanu nevonim, kulanu skenim, kulanu yodim et haTorah, mitzvah, lapeh, mitzit, mitzvahim. What's the big deal? If you have nevonim and chachamim, yodim et haTorah, why can't you have skenim? Right or wrong? I mean, ask a tremendous question. What's going on here? It's like you give someone titles. What's the big deal? So you write some lichvot, harav, hagon, sinai, v'yoka harim, baki v'charif, tzadik yisod olam. All right, mehechit teiseh. The titles are worthless anyway. Everyone knows that. So you add a title, subtract the title. What are you making a pupil out of here? Naftali, a good question or not? Now, what are you saying, your Haggadah? You say, Dr. Mizrach, what are you saying, your Haggadah? What's your origins originally? Moroccan. I spoke in class. I have a Moroccan student. She went up to heaven yesterday. I spoke how in Maftal that we don't know who's Moroccan anymore. Follow me. Yitzchak Levi, we relate to as a Jew. We're all Jews. No one ever dreamt. You understand what I'm saying? I don't dream you're Moroccan. This one's an American. We're all Jews. And I said, but do we live in a world today? And Shas took that ethnic card that, you understand, you're a Moroccan, you're an Ashkenazi, you're this, you're that. And the Russians learned from Shas. And that's the end of Israel when we go that way. The beautiful way is, like Yitzchak Levi. But no one listens to me. My own family, everyone's going to vote. They're going to vote to the right, to the right, to the right. No one trusts Maftal. And Maftal did fabulous in this government, and no one's going to reward them. I'm very upset. Anyway, back here. So what's going on? Kulam skenim. It's a good question or not? So Arav, Hagoyin, Hatzadik, what are you getting upset about? Kulanu chachamim, kulanu vonim, kulanu skenim, kulanu kanim, kulanu torah, kulanu kalman, kalman, shirav, salavajik, kulanu kalman, chassidei chabad. What are you getting upset about? But the Rebbe said so beautifully, you know why the original Haggadahs didn't have kulanu skenim and why it's not correct to say kulanu skenim? Because this part of the Haggadah is based upon a pasuk. What's the pasuk? In Shmot, where it talks about Bezalel, Lamed Aleph pasuk Gimel, va'amalei oto ruach Elokim b'chachma b'tfuna uvedat uvechol melacha. So what do you have there? Chachma, bina, vedat. Kulanu chas chachamim, kulanu nevonim. That's tfuna. That's dat. And kulanu yodim et kol haTorah kula, that would be dat. You don't have the word skenim, and that's why the original Gisa'ad or the Gisa'ad HaMeduyakad, the Haggadah that are really properly edited, that's why they don't have the words kulanu skenim. It wasn't just by chance. There's lundus behind it. It's based upon a pasuk. Fine. No. If this is the case, based upon a pasuk, what are the differences? Chachma, bina, dat. What are the differences? Rashi right there explains, b'chachma, mish, masha adam shumei macherim v'lamad. B'tfuna, mevin dava milibo, mitoch dvarim shlamad, b'dat ruach hakodesh. Very interesting. Rashi learns as follows. What is chachma? The ability to be a good student. Chachma is the level I was on when I studied with the Rav. You could say over what the Rav told you. I have to admit, I didn't have the ability to add. I didn't have the ability to really comprehend with depth. But I could say over what the Rav told me. That's chachma. Tfunah already is a much higher level. That's mevin dava mitoch dava. To be machadesh, to add. All right. An example of tfuna, for instance, my essay on Afkat Kedushin, Bitul Haget. That's tfuna. Mevin dava mitoch dava. It appears in Rakha Farah and Chelik Bet. It was in tradition originally, and a Rav in a Masada Gittin in Florida just quoted that article to explain some of the things he does. But that's tfuna. That already, you just are not saying over. You're mevin dava mitoch dava. You're taking a masham, you're taking a heichal yitzchak, you're reaching conclusions. You understand? That's tfuna. What is that, according to Rashi? That already is something beyond chachma, beyond tfuna. That is ruach hakodesh. That is something already, the highest level, that is a gift from God. That is Ruach HaKodesh. That already is not something you do on your own capabilities, but that's a reward from God that besides basic understanding, Chachmah, Mevindava Mitoch Davah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you an added gift of Ruach HaKodesh. Now, you know what's amazing? The Chachmei Kabbalah learn exactly the opposite. Chachmah is Ruach HaKodesh. Bina, they agree, is Lahavindava Mitoch Davah. Dat is, they view it a little bit differently. Dat is practical knowledge. Dat is a technical knowledge. It's to be able to take knowledge and apply it on a practical level. However, when it comes to Chachmah, that the Baal Tanya refers to Nekuda Kadma It. What does it mean, Nekuda Kadma It? That's a point of originality, a point of creation. In modern Hebrew, we have a word, Havrakot. It's that sudden insight that you get, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you a chiddush, he's megala something to you, tremendous insight, a gift from God. Suddenly your eyes open, you understand? In the middle of the night, something hits you, your eyes open, you're walking, you're thinking, suddenly that's it, you have it. That's the gift from God. And look into the Tanya, Chelek Rishon, Prakim, Bet, and Gimel. And the Rebbe explained, so on that level, in other words, Chachmah to the Baal Tanya is what Da'at is to Rashi. Bina, they agree. Rashi learns Chachmah is basically able to repeat what your Rebbe taught you. And when it comes to Da'at, which according to Rashi is the gift from God, according to the Baal Tanya, it's learning and using it on a practical level. And coming back to Chachmah, we'll take the Baal Tanya's approach. Coming back to Chachmah, what does it mean? What does this Havraka mean? What is this gift from God, this ancient gift, and the Kudga Kadma It, this ancient wisdom, what does it mean? And the Rebbe explains so beautifully that it's like a Rebbe that's having difficulty with a sugya. And suddenly it clarifies for you. Suddenly you have the key. And this is Chachmah. This is the gift from God according to the Mekubalim. Only the Yirei Hashem can have this feeling. You have to have a sensitivity to Torah. When you have this sensitivity, that's where you can be zeicha to these tremendous, wonderful insights. Now, let me say something in parentheses. I can't go much further tonight, but let me say something in parentheses. There were many Gentiles who were very learned in Torah. Professor Albright of John Hopkins of Baltimore, besides being a great Ohev Yisrael, he happened to be an outstanding Talmud Chacham. It's absolutely true. Herbert Danby, who was canon of St. George's Cathedral in East Jerusalem. I think the original plan was for the, if I'm not mistaken, the Clintons were supposed to worship there on Sunday. I don't know if they did or didn't. But Herbert Danby, who translated the Mishnah into English and learned B'chavruta when he had a difficult question with Chaim Yosef Zonnenfeld, Herbert Danby, there's no question about it, was a Talmud Chacham. There was Travis Herford at Harvard. There was Professor Hermann Struck in Germany. You can give a whole list of Gentiles who really knew how to handle a rabbinic text. But they were never zeicha to chidushim. Understand the difference? They were never zeicha to chidushim. They handled the rabbinic text, but it was in a scholarly fashion. The warmth, the joy, the chiddush that was lacking. It's like being posek a shelah. I always used to, when I dealt with Reb Moshe Feinstein, so I always used to give an example. You wouldn't ask a question of Professor Albright. Professor Albright was alive at the time. I think he died, if I'm not mistaken, the late 70s, early 80s. He was a shem dava. He used to talk and learning with fellows from Ne Yisrael. He was mamish a shem dava. But you wouldn't ask him a shelah in halacha. Because a Sheilan Halacha, you need the Kedusha, you need the sensitivity, you need the Reb Moshe Feinstein. So it's not something you can ask a guy. But that's the way the Balei Kabbalah learn. That Chachmah This is something, that special gift, that special knowledge, that special insight, that it's not just that you can repeat, but suddenly you have tremendous insight, tremendous hafraka, tremendous chiddush, your reshamayim, their sensitivity, and the whole sugya turns around. Now, let me end off. You know where you have the best description of this, and it's probably it's become the Rebbe's most famous description. It's quoted and requoted. I've translated it, not the first one to translate it, but I hope that my translation now will, at least on this little story, carry the day, because I worked very hard in perfecting it and polishing it. This is in Ubikashta Misham. Bikashta Misham, of all the Rav's public writings, is the most difficult to understand. It's interesting. No one ever believed that there would be something more difficult after Ish Halacha. Uvikashta Misham, which according to Rabbaran Lichtenstein and according to family tradition, the Rav wrote right after he wrote Ish Halacha. See, that's what's amazing. It seems that Vikashta Misham was the Rav's answer to critics who claimed that his Ish Halacha didn't have emotion in it. It's totally mechanical. You understand what I'm saying? And it seems that the Vikashta Misham was written by the Rav to answer these criticisms. What's amazing is it wasn't published until the late 70s. He had it in manuscript, and he reworked it. He wasn't satisfied. And I know that RCA lost a fortune of money because each time the Rav saw the manuscript, he made corrections on the manuscript. I have on tape the Rav reading the manuscript with David Holzer. It's an amazing tape, and I'm privileged to have it. It fell into my hands, Menashemaim Zikuni, where the Rav and David Holzer are reading the manuscript to be sure that there are no mistakes in it. But in Vikashta Misham, there's no English translation. I've spoken to endless people who are learned and they don't understand what is the Rav driving at, what is the thrust here. They're lost in it. It's a meridic piece of Vikashta Misham. But there he has the description in Reb Elia Prushna's living room when the Rav is in the crib. You know what I'm talking about? Oh, you got to see that. The Rav is in the crib and his father is sitting at the table learning with a few Talmidim, and they have a difficult Rambam, and the father is leaning with his head on his hands and he's struggling and he can't understand the Rambam and the students, and the Rav is crying in the crib. He feels everyone is so upset, so frustrated, so thwarted, and then suddenly my father jumps forward and a light has lit up for him and he starts to understand, he starts to develop. And the Rav describes how when his father is finished and all the students are overjoyed, the Rav jumps out of the crib, goes running to, or the playpen, goes running to his mother, and he says, "Mommy, Mommy, Abba succeeded in defending the Rambam. He saved the Rambam from his enemies. He explained the Rambam." And the little Rav, the little Yosef Tov, this little kid of a year and a half, is overjoyed. And that's the Havrakah, that's the Chochmah, that's the gift from God, that's the Yerei Shemayim. That's the most beautiful description I know. But that description itself, it shows you how the Rav grew up, what his childhood was, what he imbued in his childhood, understand, what went into the early roots of the Rav. It's an emeritic description. But that's exactly what the Chochmah Kabbalah are calling the Chochmah. So I have a lot more, Ian. You'll be here next week. Where do we stand? So you have to hear the tape because this becomes so practical. This is one of the shirim where the Rav Mamish talks about Psak and had a meridic shir. You'll see there are things in the shir that are unique, one of a kind. It was given in Maria in 1972. The first part of the shir is not unique. What I did earlier was literally, the Rav has done it many times in many different contexts, but each time he gives it a different hue, a different coloring. It's Torah Shabbat Peh. So let me reiterate. First of all, I said more words today on Chochmat Yisrael. David asked a wonderful question, which I'm well aware of the question. You asked the question that I have asked and have dealt with many, many times. But because you asked it, we dealt with it on the level of conservative, but that's minor. The way the conservative form is minor. The question is really the Chachma Yisrael. How can you get involved in all this research? How can you publish against the tradition? And it's interesting what Rav Meir Simcha Feldblum answered, and I found that answer in Eretz Yisrael too. It's evidently an answer that they've all worked out. When we engage in research, freedom of expression. halacha, we are bound by the Shulchan Aruch. Now you can take it or leave it, but it is an answer that you cannot easily dismiss. It's worth holding on to. Then we started the Haggadah, and we went into what's fascinating today was the Goldschmidt edition of the Seder of Amram, and the words there, wow. But one thing we saw, that there's a difference between Sipur Yetzirat Mitzrayim and Zeich Yetzirat Mitzrayim, or Haskarat Yetzirat Mitzrayim. Look in the Rav gave a whole Yotzeit shir in this, but when it comes to Sipur Yetzirat Mitzrayim, number one, you must have a Pasha that merges the Sipur with the Shevach Vahodah, and that Pasha is Arami Ovei Davi. Number two, you must dash in the Pasharat Tumo, and if God forbid you don't say Torah Sheba'al Peh, you're an apikores. I mean, the words that Rabbi Troy Gaon used, even in YU, they don't use those words when fighting with Rabbi Greenberg and Rabbi Hartman, etc., etc., etc. Okay, but we understood it historically, but that's the Kima, that's the Rambam, that's why you can say Kolam Mabar Harezim Meshubach. My example with Lulav and Etrog is a beautiful example. The story from Mishnah Halachah that I cited to you with the Rav and the Baal Tokeya, it's classic. That passage from Mishnah Halachah is classic. Again, David's question of how Chassidim could look at a Rebbe looking at a Hanukkah menorah for a half hour, what's going on here? This is exactly the heart of it. But Eino Chinami, for a Litvak, there's no such concept. When she yotzei, you yotzei. But learning Torah, there's a minimum, but the maximum has no limits. Fabulous. Then we started the Haggadah. Kulanu chachamim, kulanu gvanim, kulanu skenim. What is skenim doing there? And that was the Rav's chap. It's based upon the pasuk, and I show you the Kidfayat. I show you the Frankel edition. The Rav is correct. Now, what's the difference between them? So that's what we started to discuss. Rashi and the Chachmei Kabbalah differ, Rashi and the Baal Tanya differ, but we'll take the Baal Tanya's approach. There's not much difference, it's just where you put the stress. But Chachma is the Hafrakot, Mei Hashem, that's the last thing we discussed today. Bina is Lahavin Davim, we talked about, we're going to talk about that next week. And what's most important next week, we're going to talk about that, and the way the Baal Tanya understands that, and what it means, halacha l'maisa. So gentlemen, I just want to remind you, Sunday, Be'ezrat Hashem Yitbarach, we return to Evan HaEzah, the whole world of Psak, and it's a world of fascination, and now we'll go into examples, one after another, of the kulot we spoke about last time, and how they're applicable, and then we have to do Avad Zichro, we have to do photography, Simanim, it's a fascinating world of Psak. And Be'ezrat Hashem, next Tuesday, we'll pick up exactly where we left off here, with the Chachma Bina Vedat. Next Monday, Be'ezrat Hashem, exactly where we left off here, with the Chachma Bina Vedat. Just let me... Okay, you can change the take. One second. Do me a favor. Everyone gather right in front of me now.